Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Hellman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thanks for joining me because, as always, I have such great conversations with amazing guests, and today is no exception at all. If you are listening for the very first time, thank you for joining me. I welcome you to be part of my community. If you'd like to get the archived shows that I do every week, you can go to my Facebook page, which is What Women Must Know, or you can go to my website, which is drcherylselman.com, opt in there, and I just slip them out right into your inbox so you don't have to miss any of the shows. And by the way, I have a second show on Progressive Radio Network every Saturday at 11 a.m. called The Love Code, and that is all about our spiritual growth and evolution and healing. Hope you'll be joining me there too, because it truly is an inspirational show where we tap into the great power and potential that exists within all of us. So we need that at these times to be reminded of just how amazing we are and how powerful we are. The show, the What Women Must Know show, however, is all about empowering you with truthful information so you can make the most informed decision possible regarding your health and well-being. And I hope you'll be joining me every week because there's just so much to learn and so much to really be empowered with. And during these times, we want to be empowered with truthful information. And let's just jump into our conversation today because we're going to be talking about the camel milk revolution. Camel milk, that's the subject. And you might be as unfamiliar with camel milk as I have been up until recently. And so we're going to delve into the world of camels, of camel milk, the benefits, and a whole lot more. So I look forward to a really wonderful conversation today with my guest, Lauren Brisbane. So let me just share a little bit about Lauren. She is the director of Cute Camel on the Sunshine Coast, which was the Sunshine Coast of Australia, I have to say, which was the first camel dairy in Australia to produce pasteurized camel milk and is the world's only certified organic camel dairy. She wrote and published a two-year study in 2009, Camels in Queensland, Opportunities for Diversification. Lauren was the chair and a founding member of the Australian Camel Industry Association in 2010-2017. She advises both Australian federal and state governments on the development of the camel industry in Australia and NGOs on industry matters. And she lives on the Sunshine Coast with her husband of 27 years, three children, and a herd of over 120 camels or other children. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Lauren to the show. Hello, Lauren, and I'm so happy to have you on the program today.
Oh, hello, Dr. Cheryl. It is my pleasure to be here. And that was a wonderful introduction. Thank you.
Well, your bio is a lot longer than that, so I had to kind of condense it because you're such a dynamic woman. You have been in the area of agriculture, I gather, and, you know, the land for a really long time. So I wanted to begin our conversation today by you sharing a little bit about your story and your journey that led you to the world of camels.
It probably started quite a long time ago in the 90s. My husband and I were living in central Queensland, so in the more in central west Queensland, and we were there at the height of the drought in the 90s, and it was just heart-rending to watch everybody go through what they were going through. And what we noticed during that time, that a lot of people were dying and on their lands, unfortunately, in agriculture in Australia, particularly in drought, often people lose their lives through, you know, mental health conditions. And every other week there was another funeral coming into town. The drought was so bad that people were just, you know, the bank was knocking on their door, they're losing the land. And most of them had cattle. And I just thought then, this is ridiculous. We are not England. We don't have, you know, a great continent to grow, you know, cattle on, although cattle is king in Australia. But I thought, How can people be losing their properties and their livelihoods and their lives through managing cattle who just do not survive in drought? So I looked for another animal that I thought was more suited to Australia, and it really came from a social perspective. And I came across camels. A few years later, I came across camels, and at the time we had a partnership with people who had Wagyu beef, and we had competition quarter horses with them. And I walked into a meeting one day and said, I think we need to co-graze with camels. And that was a very fateful statement. It started a long journey. I wrote a study, my husband and I funded, and I wrote the study on the development of the camel industry. And while our partnership didn't continue in the cattle industry, unfortunately, one of our partners succumbed to a very aggressive cancer. We went on with the camels, and from there we set up the Australian Camel Industry Association. I was on the National Feral Camel Management Project for the Australian Government, and then we, you know, from doing the study, we decided that if we were going to be involved in the camel industry, it would be in the dairy industry, because ethically that suited us as a family, and we thought, well, you know, looking down the track, and you know, the changes in behaviour and the way people were, consuming food, and that the gut industry was the most growing industry in Australia in food, we thought, well, this fits in perfectly. And we had 400,000 wild camels at our disposal. So we thought, well, you know, let's, if we're going to go into this, let's do that. So, and we weren't dairy farmers, so we didn't come from a background of as dairy farmers, so we looked at it in a completely different way, and I think that's put us in good stead. We don't look at our camels as stock. We look at them as our partners, and we got to know them. So, you know, really for the first couple of years, well, I've had camels for quite a while. So I've had camels since 2007. I bought some while I was doing the study. We started with two and now we have 120. So I have to feel a little bit sorry for my husband. So while I was writing the study, I went, hey, honey, do you mind if I buy a couple of camels? And he looked at me and he sort of raised his eye and rolled his eyes as he did, you know, I'm a little bit left of centre. And he went, really? Do we really need to buy some camels for you to do this study? And I said, well, it's a good way to get to know them, you know, and really know what I'm talking about. And now we have 120.
Makes sense.
Yeah. So, but, anyway, it's been a journey, and it certainly has.
So I have a question to ask, because having been involved with cattle raising, with people cattle raising, being involved with a part of Australia that is, I mean, Australia is known for its droughts. Lorna, why is it that people continue to raise animals like cattle and even sheep, that when it's known that in Australia you go through cycles of severe droughts, you run out of water, you run out of feed, cattle don't do well, but it seems like the industry just keeps doing the same thing all the time? This is kind of an aside question, but well, I got you here. I thought I'd ask it because it seems like, you know, that's a definition of insanity, right? Keep doing what doesn't work. So I'm just curious, what's your perspective on that?
Look, we produce amazing beef in this country. We do, and to a certain extent, people have learned to manage drought. They often shift their cattle around to areas that aren't drought stricken, and they destock, so they reduce their stock level so that they can manage. And we have a fabulous reputation around the world for our beef. So certainly we have more drought tolerant animals. But what I found in doing the study was that camels are certainly, they're incredibly drought tolerant. And people who have them and co-graze them with their cattle will never get rid of them, because they just, you get an increase in weight from the cattle during drought. And camels eat weeds, the camels will drink any sort of water. In fact, they'll drink your bath water. But they, you can, most properties will have, you know, bores and water sources. But there are certain bores that you certainly can't turn on for cattle because they might be a high salinity bore. Well, camels can drink that, so they can drink water that they can drink seawater. So, and they've been known to do that certainly in times of severe drought in Central Australia, and they'll go down to the coast and drink the seawater. So, cattle can be grazed all over Australia, but certainly when we're in severe drought, often drought pertains to certain areas, and other times it's a continent issue, and which we've just come out of now, or just still coming out of. You know, there's still large areas of Australia that's still drought declared at the moment. But I think because people have been doing it for such a long time, and we have such a great product, they continue to do it. But I think there's certainly huge advantages to co-grazing with camels, because, you know, you've still got another meat product, and you've got a live animal when you're in the middle of drought, and it's certainly a lot better than looking out into a dirt-ridden paddock paddocks that have nothing alive on them. You know, camels will still survive. I've seen camels in the middle of drought, and they, as long as they've got some sort of water source, they are fat and roly-poly. So, in fact, grotesquely fat. So Australia's got perfect conditions for camels. I think that certainly more people need to co-graze with them. I would never say, you know, don't have cattle, but it works, you know, most of the time. But there's a proportion of the time in this country it's incredibly difficult.
Well, that leads me to the next question, which has to do with the history of camels in Australia. I probably would imagine that most people listening have very little, if any, knowledge that there are 400,000 camels wandering around in the outback of Australia. Obviously, they're not indigenous, and I think it's a fascinating history. So can we talk a little bit about the history of camels in Australia?
Sure. Well, the history is that, you know, because Australia is such a large continent and, that, of course, trying to develop the interior of Australia was incredibly difficult without some type of animal that you know, I think they started to use horses and realised that they would just die of lack of water. And it was such a large country that there is no way they could develop the interior of Australia without some type of animal that would be incredibly hardy. So they started to import camels in the 1800s, and really towards the later 1800s, really the 1880s, right through to the 1820s, they imported about 20,000 camels into Australia. And then, and that's how, you know, that really, you know, you often hear that term of riding on the sheep's back. Well, the wool actually rode on the back of camels, you know, out of those areas. And all those interior towns were developed using camel trains. So that's how we developed the interior of Australia. But towards the late 1920s and the early 1930s, that was the advent of road and rail in Australia. And they didn't want, more than anything, they didn't want the Afghans, because the camel trains were run by Afghans and Pakistanis. And more than anything, they didn't want Afghans and Pakistani people here in Australia. And they wanted them gone with their camels. So they actually had a mandate to shoot all camels. And the camel trainers and herders refused to do that. So some were put down, but at least 10,000 of them, at least 10,000 of them were actually let go. and then they're bred up in Australia because we've got perfect conditions most of the time. So we now have 400,000 wild camels. So they really did nothing but wander around and grow and breed for a long period of time. And then in the 70s, the first start of a sort of a camel industry started to grow, and it was using camels for, you know, And, you know, there's certainly people all through that throughout that time that used camels on their properties or to get from A to B. But then there was the tourism industry, and that's still the tourism industry in Australia with camels is in niche areas around Australia, and they really provide a wonderful backdrop to tourism in certain areas like Broome in Western Australia, and then there was a sort of a budding meat industry, but it was the original people, certainly in the 70s and the 80s in Australia, were they were sort of a wilder type of person, because camels were sort of wild, and it sort of attracts a different type of person. So, and often those sort of people are not very business minded. They're sort of, you know, go getters, and they're, you know, and entrepreneurs in a very basic sense. And, you know, so it was quite difficult to develop the industry with a wild species. But since then, things have changed, and certainly since 2000, things have changed, and a lot of business people have seen camels for what they really are, and the people that have been managing them for many years or recently have just loved them. And certainly Australia now produces a lot of this, produces the largest amount of camel meat in the world and exports it. And the camels that are managed on Indigenous land, which is the Nanandara in central Australia. And the Nanandara is, the size of their lands is the size of Tasmania. So if you look, you know, we consider Tasmania our Apple Isle, but that's a large plot of land. So you can imagine the Indigenous community who own lands the size of Tasmania, and most wild camels are actually on their land. So they have about 200,000 camels on their land. And they have 8 yards, and there's bores, so water sources, and they move the camels in, and they have a breeding program, and they move the camels in and out. And male camels really only have a role as breeders, but as, you know, for meat, most of the male camels are used for meat, only the special breeders, male breeders that they'll keep. And obviously the females they keep, and good females they keep. And so they use them to supply meat. But the Nanandara also supplies the dairy industry in Australia, the camel dairy industry. So the camels that we use on our property actually have transferred from Central Australia, and they're on a managed property in Central Queensland, and then we buy from there. So the industry has, it's certainly growing, but one of the tyrannies for us is of distance. So, and transporting camels in a long distance is incredibly expensive. So, you know, that's always been an issue with developing the industry, because it's so expensive to transport them. So cattle, you can double deck, and camels, they needed a certain amount of space on trucks, or, you know, what we call road trains. So there's a road train has got three areas on it. They're just huge. And, you know, you've got to, there's a certain space that you've got to leave for camels so they can sit down, because when you transport a camel, they sit. So, you know, so it's still very much a developing industry. And the great thing about our dairy industry is that we have the only disease-free camels in the world. We don't have brucellosis, anthrax, or foot and mouth disease. And, of course, our camels aren't subject to MERS virus either. So, So there is a small live trade. Camels go generally into the Middle East for breeding purposes, just to reinvigorate some breeding, and because we have quite pure genetics, and so they are looking for those to reinvigorate their genetics in the Middle East.
That's
a little overview of what we do. Yeah.
It's pretty fascinating. And, I mean, they're highly prized, Australian camels, like you said, to export them back into the Middle East to upgrade their herds. And, you know, I'm sure most people didn't know that. I didn't know that the Aboriginal community in Central Australia really are working with the camels, and that's part of their economy. I had no idea. I actually had no idea there were 400,000. I knew there was a large number, but 400,000. So there's still a couple of 100,000 that are just feral wandering around out there.
No, most of the others tend to be on in the APY lands, which is another Aboriginal area, which is, and please don't ask me to spell it, but they're in the Anangu, Pitjantjatjara, Yankunytjatjara lands. So they're a little bit lower down on the corner there in South Australia, Western Australia, and Northern Territory. So they also have camels, and they do supply, but not as prolifically as they do in the Anandara. There are camels that, and they're certainly, they're not wild, but there's managed camels throughout Queensland, and there's probably anywhere between 20 and 40,000 camels that are managed in Queensland. And then some people have wild camels through the Simpson Desert and in other desert areas, and certainly over in Western Australia. But then there are other people who just leave them on their land, keep them there to, really manage weed control and they're happy for them to be there. So, there's other Aboriginal communities that would certainly like to develop their industry. So, but as I said, Australia, there's always a tyranny of distance in Australia. So it's not a terribly easy thing to develop.
So tell us about camels and their personalities. There's a belief system that they can be ornery. Like you should think about camels spitting. I don't know where that came from. But that's really not the true nature of camels. so give us some insight into the true nature of camels.
Probably the one question that I have been asked over and over and over again, and I wish I had a dollar for every time it was asked to me, the first thing people say is, don't they spit? And I said, well, no, actually. To be really honest, it's not spitting. They actually can vomit. It's actually vomiting. But they, which my daughter loves to tell people when we have tours come in, and usually people are aghast at that. But that it's a defense mechanism. And, of course, that's not their true nature. And the reason why they're known for that is because they've generally been beaten throughout history often, and not true camel herders or the Bedouins. People who the camels are part of their lives, they don't do that. There's no need. They're highly, highly intelligent. Often in some tourism situations and in some areas of the world, because they're so big, people are frightened of them, so they beat them because they feel like that they can control them that way. Which is ridiculous because the camel is so big, if they really wanted to hurt you, they could. So that tends to be a defense mechanism. And, don't they spit, they bite, they're ugly and they stink. That's basically what most people think. But it's actually not true. They don't, our camels certainly don't spit because they're loved and there's no need for them to do it. And they will only kick as a defense mechanism and now certainly don't do it. And not for any other reason except that if we catch a swinging leg anywhere, we normally just say, I usually just drop my voice an octave too or a bit lower and go, don't you do that, that's rude. So don't you do it. So, and it's like, and so, really through just love and kindness. And camels will always give you the benefit of the doubt. Even a wild camel will always give you the benefit of a doubt, although I highly recommend that people never, ever approach a wild camel because if it's a bull, camel bulls are a whole different ball game. But camels will always give you the benefit of the doubt. And they're highly intelligent and they're gentle creatures because they know they can hurt you because they're so big. So it's not a competition. But if you learn to understand them and respect them for who they are, they're kind and gentle. That is their nature. And they're loving and they are easy to manage. They understand English or whatever language you speak. They can understand language. And they're not what people think they are, and they're certainly nothing like cattle. They're actually more like elephants. So they live in a matriarchal society, and their emotional health is just as important as their physical health and well-being. So, and learning that and understanding who their friends are and the relationships they have and, you know, and what sort of mother they are and, you know, those sorts of things are, you know, really, really important. And, you know, and sometimes, you know, when camels are new mum, sometimes they're like any mother there. I look at the baby and think, oh, my goodness, what am I doing now? You know, so others take to it like a duck to water, and others just, you know, we've had some young girls, young camels, and we had one last year, and she was quite a young mum. We don't normally allow our camels to have a baby at four, but she been out west with the bull and she came in and she was pregnant. So she was four when she had her first baby. She had no idea what to do and no idea how to feed. And so, and we realised that. So we just, you know, brought her in and just made her feel it's okay, it's all right, you know. And we just put her with some other girls, one who's an extremely good mother, and she'd actually weaned her baby off, but she quickly made some more milk for the new baby and just fed him and showed her what to do. And so by the time we kept, you know, got up in the morning, she was well and truly feeding him. But it's it feels quite strange at first for them, and then they're utter sore, and you know, so you've got to make sure that you know, do a lot of work with them just to let them relax. And you know, you just feed them, you don't let them go anywhere, you just keep feeding them. So like, it's really not a lot different to, you know, women and babies. And so we just, you know, look after them exactly the same way. So,
well, sounds like you're really good with camel psychology, Lauren.
I've learned to read them, and I've learned to understand what I've learned to read them. And they, and I have to tell you a really funny story. I watched this really amazing documentary in Africa about a woman who talked to animals, and she was an animal psychic. And I watched it, and she was actually, people used her for their different animals. And there was a fellow who had does have a farm in Africa, and he collects big cats that have need to be rehomed from zoos, or cats that have become a problem, or you know, in Africa, and he goes and buys them also around the world. And he had a black leopard, and it attacked him and nearly killed him, and it would never leave the hutch. And he said, you know, didn't really know what to do with him anymore. And he got a woman in to talk to him and found out all sorts of things about him. And then she said, look, just sit and talk to him and tell him what he wants to know. And within half an hour, he got up and left the hutch, and he never had a problem with him again. And I thought, okay, I'll just go and have a chat. Okay, this might actually work. So so I went to my lead cow and sat and had a talk to her, and I sort of looked around. I thought, if someone could see me now, they'd think I was completely nuts. But I sat and talked to her about what was going on and what we were doing and all the rest of it. And she was nodding at me and just grunting like she understood. And I said, oh, well, I'll keep going. And she did. And I said, are you okay with that? And she, and, you know, she grunted and kept nodding her head and went, never had a problem since. So, and I went, okay, that works. Okay, all right. So if we're changing anything, like if we're changing our routine for some reason, I just explain to them what's going on, because they'll come to you and look at you as like, what's going on today? Like, we don't understand this. You've changed what we're doing, because they're real creatures of habit. They like to do the same thing every day. And so we just explain to them what's going on. And, you know, sometimes I'll have new staff members that say, come on, come on. And I went, you're asking them to go somewhere. Just tell them where you want them to go. Don't say, come on. You just have to say, come on, girls, could you please go into the arts? Or, you know, and they'll just walk up. Or we say, do you mind going through that gate? And I've had them come out of a gate, and I say, look, when you come out of that gate, can you stop, turn around, and we're going to go the other way because there's a bit of mud that way. So can you come this way, please? They stop, they turn around, and they go the other way. So, you know, I love it. Yeah. So, it, yeah. And look, That documentary was just so invaluable to me because I really did learn to communicate. And so our staff are, you know, they love you to talk to them. They love you to tell them what's going on. And you know, they love some comfort, or, you know, if they're having problems feeding them, we always congratulate them when they've got a new baby. We go, congratulations, you're a mummy. You know, what a beautiful baby. We don't care what it is, never care. Never look at a boy and go, it's a boy. We go, you've got a healthy baby, congratulations, you know. So, and so we have a lot to do with them. And our last baby actually born, we actually live streamed it, and which is, we would never have done it if it made her feel nervous, but she didn't care. She was quite happy for us to be there. And as soon as the baby was born, I sort of pulled off all the, you know, all the sack off the baby and just cleaned it up, and straight away she didn't mind at all. And we said, congratulations, it was her first baby, and congratulations, you okay? You know, so, you know, are you okay? And, you know, I've had babies get stuck and gone down to the paddock and went, I took young James with me, and I said, come on, James, I think Millie's having a baby. So I went down, and sure enough, and the baby was sort of halfway out, and I went, oh, you're going to have to give me a hand here. And then I just went over to her and I said, are you okay, sweetie? I said, are you all right? She looked at me as if to say, do I look like I'm all right? The baby's stuck, you know. So I went, I'll give you a hand. I said, so James, just come and grab another leg, and you go, all right, push, you know, and you just say the normal thing, just wait till the contraction, say, just push, honey. And so she pushed, and you just ease that baby gently out, and then, you know, the baby came out, and she stood up, and the baby was in my arms, and I just placed her at her feet, and I looked at her and said, are you okay? She looked at me and say, I am now. So, you know, but... So we do have a lovely relationship with them. We treat them as we don't treat them as stock. We treat them as our, you know, they're part of
family.
Our team, and of course they are. They're family, yeah. And they're treated with a lot of love and kindness. And so we only milk once a day because we get enough milk out of them in the morning, and it's really important that they're herd managed. So they go out as a herd every day, and you know, spend time with their friends and their babies and their community, and enjoy being mums, and the babies enjoy having playmates, and, you know, so it's lovely to watch. It really is.
Yeah. Camel community. You know, they're
it is a camel
having
community.
A happy,
yeah,
perfect life for them. So when you milk them, do you have machines that milk them, or do you milk them by hand?
They're machine milked. Yeah, no, they're machine milked, but we do. It's a lot of preparation, so they're washed and they're cleaned and their udders are checked every day. So our camels never, ever get mastitis. And if you know, for any women who's ever had mastitis, it's insidious, and it's we would never want them to go through that. So they're checked every day to make sure that their udders are in good condition and they're ready to be milked. And then we machine milk them. And and there's always a hind milk that's left there. So they actually make more milk for us. So we never take any milk from the baby. So but we milk them for 2 years. But once the baby's 2 months old, we don't touch the mother before the baby's 2 months old. Once the baby's 2 months old, they can be separated at night and mummy and baby can see each other. But it allows her then to rest at the night time, and she builds a rudder up during the night. We comp feed the baby. The baby's on hard feed, so the baby's comp fed. And they actually love it because they're in a creche and they get to be play and be really naughty. And so that's their naughty time, and then they all cuddle up and sleep together. And mummy can see them, but the mothers get to sit down and relax, because it's a huge thing to ask an animal to produce more milk for you as well as feed a baby. So they make, you know, 25% more milk for us, and then they feed the baby all day, and they bring themselves back in at 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and they finish feeding the baby, and it's like, get this baby off me. I've fed it all day. It's just insane. So
I need a break.
Yeah, they do. And so they get to sleep. So we milk them for 2 years, and that also gives their womb rest, their womb a rest, so they only have a baby with us every 3 years. So it allows their womb to rest, allows them then to put more weight back on to get ready for another baby, and then they spend a whole year out in the paddock. And they go out with the bull, and he services them. If they're ready to be serviced, he will service them. He would never chase them, or he's very, very gentle, and he's he knows how to love them up and make them feel special, and he mates with them for a few weeks, and the minute they know that they're pregnant, then they sort of shut up shop, and that's it. So then he has to go on to another group. he's learnt not to, you know, get too amorous with too many people all at once, because otherwise he'll leave himself with nobody for the rest of the year. So, but he's incredibly gentle. Yeah, so, and he's very kind. So he never touches our little girls, our 2, 3, and 4-year-olds, he never touches, because they're too young. And it's only when they're ready to sit for him that he will, if they mosey up to them at, you know, 4, and then they're having a baby at 5, then he will, and they sit for him, then that's okay. But sometimes they don't fall pregnant till they're 6 or 7, you know, because they're not ready. Okay. So we don't, so he doesn't ever force the issue. So, so which is good, because they're in much better condition, not chased around the paddock. And because wild camels can be very ferocious. It's, you know, it's the survival of the fittest, and, you know, many camels break their broken legs, and, you know, from being knocked over and literally raped, you know. But you know, when you've got a hand raised bull who's, you know, never had to worry, and we grew him out way out in the country for a couple of years just to allow him to be a bull and find his legs. He went out there with a group of girls, and some of them came back pregnant, and others weren't ready. So they're pregnant now, but they weren't ready. So so he's been allowed to be just be a bull, and just be, you know, and enjoy just growing up and with love. And yeah, so he's got a lovely nature, and all his little babies that we've had this year and the last year are just gorgeous. You know, big, strong, healthy calves that are, you know, just as gorgeous as he is. So, it's lovely to watch.
Well, he must be very happy with his harem. Can't complain about that.
Yeah, he is. And it was funny the other week. It's funny, he's out there, out the back, and there's, you know, there's sort of like 60 camels or so out the back, and, you know, he'd, and of course, anyway, electricity went off overnight, so the electrical fence between, you know, the dairy area and that, which is quite big. And we're on, our camels are managed on about 1,500 acres, so there's plenty of room. Anyway, I was checking the fence and thought, fence is off. I can get through there. I might just crawl through and go and see what's going on in the dairy, because there's a whole lot more girls up there. So he just wandered up. He came in with the dairy herd in the morning, and I went, the staff rang and said, Bam Bam's in. And I went, okay, all right. I went and checked the fence, and sure enough, it was off. He looked so pleased with himself. It's like, oh, I'm here, you know. And I said, is he in rut? And she said, no. Rut means that they're coming into season. Here's an interesting thing about camels, and this is where Mother Nature has finally got it right. The girls don't come into season, so the bulls do. So... And I think everybody will find this really funny. That this is, and I often talk about it when I'm giving talks, and I go, tell me what this reminds you of. The bull comes into rut, and he's walking around proud as punch, you know. So, and he exudes this oil from the back of his head in a gland area, and when he's really in rut, it gets a bit smelly, and then he sort of slobbers, and he's got this sort of long tongue thing that comes out, this big, and it's called a dulla, right? And he thinks he's fabulous, right? He just really does, and he struts around, and the girls look at him and go, oh, all right. They sort of raise their eyebrows and go, oh, all right. And if they're interested and keen, they'll sit down, and he thinks he's fabulous. But by the end of rut, which can be 6 to 8 months, he just looks like no one owns him, because he's lost that much weight from... And he smells, and he's, you know, and the girls, he'll mate with the girls for 2 weeks, and then all of a sudden they've realised they're pregnant, so they just shut up shop and that's it. That's all finished and done with, you know. So it's like, okay, we better find the next one. And it's like, it's very funny. So they don't go through all that sort of thing. And it's great that it's the rutting season. But he thinks he's fabulous, and you think, you smell awful and you look terrible, you know.
And, it's been a rough time.
It's funny to watch.
That's funny.
Of course, when he was soon as he was in the round yard with all the other girls, he started to leak in the back and he started slobbering. And I went, there we go. He's going to come into rut early this year. So, yeah. And of course, you know, there was a few girls who thought, oh, I'm up for this. You know, they were backing up to him, you know, and I'm like, get away, you're still feeding a baby, you know. So, oh, goodness, it's very funny, but he was not aggressive.
It must be so interesting for you.
Yeah.
I was going to say, it must be so interesting to see. Well, it must be so interesting for you to see the different personalities of your camels and, you know, which girl is you know, up for action and others who, you know, have to be persuaded. It's just, you know, it's just they all have their personalities, I'm sure.
They really do have their personalities, all have different personalities, you know. So, some girls are what we call bomb-proof, and they're like a bomb-proof pony, and you can do anything to them. You could milk them out in the paddock, and they wouldn't care, and they love, you know, they're really placid with kids, and their dogs play around them. We've got four Maremma dogs, which they help look after them. So we've got four Maremma dogs and three donkeys as well. So they help look after the babies. They guard them. And camel babies are really fragile when they're born, and they can't actually walk. They can teeter around, but they really only stand and drink at least the first 3 days, and they can't really get anywhere for about a week. So they are incredibly fragile. And, of course, in Australia we have predation, which is we have wild dogs, and so our donkeys and our dogs protect them. So if wild dogs come in, mum will as well, but if you have, there's packs of wild dogs around, we, you know, our donkeys are ferocious. So you wouldn't think so, little tiny Jerusalem donkeys that look really cute. Oh. They don't like wild dogs,
wow.
So they get a great kick out of trampling them, so they tend to stay away. So, yeah, so it's a funny farm, and, you know, it really is. And then we've got these four huge white Maremma dogs that look like sort of a cross between a wolf and whatever else, and a golden retriever. But they're as gentle as everything else. But, you know, you'd never want to go in there at the night time because they'd eat you. Yeah, no, so you don't mess with them. But, yeah, so it's a funny sort of farm. But, you know, when the babies are laying down, you know, the dogs will often sit there and lay down with them, or the donkeys will be, and they're, you know, it's really quite a funny little farm, but it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it sounds precious. Well, let's talk about camel milk while we have this rest of the show, because there's so much to be said about camel milk, and it's getting more popular in Australia for sure. I there's some talk of camel milk in the U.S., but I don't think it's fully appreciated, or maybe it is, and I'm not aware of it, but I know there's a lot more going on in Australia right now. So tell us, what is the nutritional value of camel milk? What's the interest in camel milk?
Okay, so it has a different molecular makeup. So it's different to it than dairy milk. So it doesn't, very specifically, it doesn't have beta casein 6 in it, which is one of the allergens. And it also doesn't have beta-lactoglobulin in it. And they're the two dairy allergens that cause that dairy allergies and there's upset. And while they have lactose, it's low lactose, but without those two allergens in it, the majority, 99% of people can drink it. But it heals the gut. So it has immunoglobulins in it and immunoglobulins in it, and they are one-tenth the size of human, and they're antibodies. So they ingest into the gut wall really quickly, and they heal the gut and the bowel. So it is a very much a gut product, but it also allows you to have milk with a really high nutritional value. So it's very high in calcium and vitamin C, and so it has 250 mils has 16% of your calcium needs and 28% or 27% of your, you know, vitamin C needs. So, you know, if you're not feeling very well, it'll pep you up really quickly. And if you've got a cold, you know, you drink camel milk and you'll feel a lot better really quickly. That for high, or you're not well. It has a natural insulin in it. So the natural insulin, so it really helps with diabetes. So it helps control diabetes, and certainly in type 1, it reduces hypos, and type 2 diabetes, if you, you know, if you've got a really good, if you change your diet, have a really good diet, it really makes a massive difference. And a lot of people find that with type 2 diabetes, they've have very few problems once they start drinking camel milk. So with and other, so people with gut and bowel disorders, they find, and autoimmune conditions, they find it an incredible product. And children with autism, because dairy and gluten with children with autism tend to make their issues worse. And so the camel milk heals the gut and allows them to get proper nutrition. But because it doesn't have those two dairy allergens in it, it reduces the case of morphia in the brain. So so children often with autism that start drinking camel milk and are in, have the benefit of a good diet, will often then start to verbalise and look at you, and certainly have their behaviour is a lot better, mainly because they really can start to converse with you and interact. So, you know, it's certainly not a cure, but from a, you know, from a really good, you know, high-value product on a nutritional basis, it's a wonderful product. So, and you, so we try and produce it as cleanly as possible. So, as you know, we're certified organic, but and we also, we have a really low stress environment. So camel milk generally around the world is quite a low fat. Ours isn't, and I'm a great believer in having fat in food, so natural fat in food. So ours tends to be at least, you know, 4.3 to 4.8, most of the time 4.8% fat. So and so it, and it's creamy, and it's, you know, so there's cream in our milk, and it's, you know, just ours tends to taste more like dairy milk, but it also has a slight saltiness, and that's a feature of camel milk, has a slight saltiness to it. So certainly if you're having it with your coffee, you know, a little bit of salt in coffee makes it taste amazing. So camel milk in coffee really enhances the flavour of the coffee. So, and for those people with, you know, gut issues, it allows them to have, you know, a coffee with a milk product in it that really is, tastes sensational. So so it has a lot of value in, you know, in food products. We make additional products out of course. We have a product called a grab and go for the gut, which is a honey and mango yogurt smoothie, and that is a great sort of snack product. We do cheese, we do a Persian feta, and we, so of course we do chocolate, but it's a Swiss couverture with a camel milk praline in the middle. And you know, everything we do, I'm a bit of a fanatic, actually. Yeah, of course, you know, so I'm a bit of a fanatic about what we do. So it always has to be the best, and you know, so, and we do a skincare range as well. And we use fresh camel milk in our skincare at our therapeutic goods administration level. So we've developed a, and so camel milk heals the gut from the inside, but it also heals the skin, because the same value is when you place the milk on the skin and in products, it heals the skin as well. So we've had amazing, amazing reactions. And it was in R&D for 5 years, and of course I wouldn't use any essential oil that wasn't perfect and that didn't work well with camel milk. So we've got this amazing range of essential oils with our camel milk, and then we finish it off with a native Australian botanicals that also heal the skin. So we've had an amazing reaction, skin reactions, you know, people with cystic acne. Our daughter has cystic acne and she now no longer has it. So camel milk has cleaned that up, and burns and, you know, dermatitis from radiation treatment for, you know, for cancer patients. It just heals it amazingly. And yeah, so it's an amazing, camel milk is an amazing product. And the way you produce it is really, really important though. And producing it ethically in a low stress environment where your animals are looked after, you get an amazing product. And So that's our aim of producing it. But it is. And, you know, really, if it's produced properly, it doesn't taste a lot different from dairy milk. But and you don't get all that sort of thickness that in your throat and that congestion that you get with dairy. So it's a really palatable, easy to digest product.
Well, you know, just reiterating what you just shared with us, so people who have chronic gut issues would benefit from camel milk because it helps to heal the gut. The immunoglobulins is boosting the immune system. So when you get immunoglobulins, it's one of the most powerful things you can do to deal with inflammation and also boost the immune system, right? So it's enhancing, and especially these days, anything that can, you know, enhance the functioning of the gut and strengthen the immune system is critical. But then, you know, so anyone with, you know, any sort of gut issues, I would imagine, who have gluten sensitivities or lactose sensitivities, who may have Crohn's disease or IBS or just any of the range of health issues related to the gut would benefit, right? So there's that community, and then there's the community. I mean, I'm gluten intolerant, and you know, I had an autoimmune disease I was diagnosed with many, many years ago, and I've been really cautious about taking dairy, but camel's milk would be the perfect thing, obviously. But then there's, you know, you're saying the kids with autism or the people with autism, that they have such sensitive guts that can aggravate their conditions in many ways. And boy, how fabulous to have a product that can help heal the gut, which is always an issue with autistic children, or children, I would say, have any learning disabilities at all. And then the third community are the diabetics. Well, what you were saying, it will help to manage the insulin levels. So is that what you're saying, that it actually
It does. It reduces hypos. Definitely reduces hypos in type 1 diabetes and just makes it a lot more manageable, and certainly in type 2. But diabetes, if people manage their diet properly and they have, you know, their type 2 diabetes tends to be a lot more manageable. It's an amazing product. They're an amazing creature. They're highly evolved. They're considered the most highly evolved land mammal. And they've been around for millions of years. And they're current. And do you know that they originated in North America? The oldest fossils of camels were in North America. Yeah. And their feet, their padded feet, were designed for snow originally. And then while the continents were still bridged, they actually then walked across through sort of North America, across down through the Silk Road and then into Asia and the Gulf region. And they transferred. And we actually believe that if Australia was still attached to New Guinea, they would have walked down into Australia because the conditions were just perfect for them. So, but it detached before they got down that far. But so their feet are quite adaptable then to sand, but they originally were for snow. So, and of course, and, you know, some camels in the world are in snow.
And I was going to say, and they still found their way to Australia one way or another.
Yeah, they did anyway. So, it ended up being quite a fortuitous event because of the disease. The disease issues with camels around the world, then you know, basically they've been sitting on an island for 100 years, and we don't have brucellosis, here, and anthrax or foot and mouth disease. So when MERS virus started overseas, and camels in America don't have MERS virus either, but elsewhere in the world they do. They all have MERS virus, which is a type of coronavirus. They're actually carriers of it, and which is Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome. But that happened. We think that only happened. There was a genetic change there, and it happened probably about 40 years ago. So, but unfortunately, that's spread throughout the camel communities, you know, around the world. So it was actually quite fortuitous that it did come to Australia and sit in an island for 100 years because it, you know, it's allowed then for a disease-free breed of camels to, and of course the survival of the fittest, so you know, camels have survived in incredibly in conditions that have been, you know, in drought in Central Australia. So, but it's lovely to be actually utilising an animal that is incredibly easy to manage. And land management and farming in Australia is changing, as it is around the world, where a lot more women are involved now. It's not as patriarchal as it used to be. And they're an incredibly easy animal to manage. I mean, some of the young women that work for me, like young Jo, she weighs 40 kilos. You know, she's tiny. She's a dancer. And, you know, she can manage 40, 50 camels on her own. She'll just, you know, she can herd them in and tell them where to go and, you know, you go into your yard and, you know, they're sitting over there. And, you know, they're incredibly easy to manage. You don't have to be big, strong and tough to manage a camel. You just have to be kind. And they respond to that really well. So, yeah, and you do. People have got used to me now.
I just want to say, Lauren, because we're coming to the end and I want people to know where to go to get more information. So if people are interested in knowing more about Lauren and her camels and her products, the website is Q, the letter Q, camel, I guess Q for yes. Queensland. Qcamel.com.au. Oh, that was a good guess.
That's right.
Qcamel.com.au. Do you ship your products overseas?
We do. Yeah, we do. We can send powdered milk overseas at the moment. Fresh milk is far more difficult at the moment. But we'll be going through export accreditation this year. But so we hope to go into North America in the next sort of 12 months or so. But we've got, you know, customers waiting. We have, you know, personal customers, certainly in different areas around the world, but so sort of Singapore, New Zealand and et cetera. But, yeah, we'll be exporting later in this year. But we certainly sell powdered milk and, of course, our skincare we send all over the world. And,
great.
You know, they can look on our website and find out a little bit more and you know, about our camels and what we do and how we manage our camels and our ethics. And but can certainly buy online. So, and we ship all over the world. So it's, you know,
beautiful.
So we love it.
Beautiful.
And, you know, we've designed the products so that it's suitable for people with all sorts of skin conditions and skin types. And so people are just loving it. So, but we can certainly send powdered milk, that's for sure.
Okay, so qcamel.com.au, check it out. Learn more about camel milk, especially if you have gut issues, if, you know, children who have autism, learning disabilities, diabetics, people who have skin issues. This is an amazing healing food. Lauren Brisbane, it's been absolutely a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you for the wonderful work and the wonderful education you've given us today in the world of camels. And I look forward to coming and visiting and hanging out with the girls there and the guy. And
it was a pleasure. It was a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. It was such a pleasure. And thank you.
You're absolutely, absolutely welcome. And to everyone listening, thank you for joining in. Hope to see you again or have you listen again next week. And until next week, remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.